Welcome to Primary Care Talks. I'm Dr. Hassan Jahan from the Eastern Academic Health Sites Network. I'm going to be taking a trip up and down the country, speaking to local GPs, local clinicians and non-clinicians about the ideas and innovations they've put in place to try and future-proof the NHS. In this first podcast, we're going to be speaking to Dr. Neil Moder at Thistlemoor Medical Centre, who's really been involved in trying to bring his local community into the practice to deal with multinational patients whose first language is not English. It's no surprise to you, me, or our listeners, I'm sure, that primary care services are under an immensely increasing amount of pressure to maximise resources and deliver good quality patient care. And as part of that, recruitment and retention is an issue for practice staff, both clinical and non-clinical. So could you give us an idea as to what sort of challenges specifically you guys face here?
So we've recently reviewed appointments over a month basis, and from that review we found that 86% of consultations are conducted in a language other than English. So the vast majority of our patients do not speak English to a degree that we are able to have a direct conversation with the patient. So we need assistance in the consultation room to help us communicate. And I'd say that a lot of it is because of the economics of Peterborough. Actually, a lot of the migrant population that came over are in jobs like retail or working in fields and farms and factories, often with fellow colleagues, and so their ability to speak English can be very limited. Their English to actually communicate about health is even more limited, just as if you or I went to France and would try and speak to a doctor there about our ailments. We might be able to have a passing conversation, but to actually describe what's going on with neck pain or knee pain in technical language is really difficult when people's first language is not English.
Of that 86%, is it a vast proportion from one particular community, or can it be varied?
If only it was as simple as that. Unfortunately, it spread over a number of different languages. So, Polish, Lithuanian, Russian, Latvian, Romanian, and some are Urdu speakers as well. But it's kind of spread. The predominant languages are Lithuanian and Polish, but the other languages are also well represented.
And just so we're clear, Neil, you joined Thistlemoor in 2008. It'd be interesting to hear whether this is an issue that's arisen since 2008 or whether actually there was a large migrant population prior to that, and it's only really since you've taken on the helms that it's become an issue that you've highlighted.
So around 2008, probably about 30 or 40% of our list was comprised of patients from Eastern Europe. Now that proportion is probably up to 70 or 80% of our 23,000 patients. So it was already an issue for communication, at that time, but that issue has kind of grown. And I think part of that is also because hopefully the service that we provide meets the needs of that population. And so actually patients are attracted to the clinical model that we have.
Could you let us know what sort of solutions, innovative solutions, you've come up with to try to tackle these?
Yeah, so I guess we've looked at the issue with language and tried to think, well, how can we kind of get over that issue? And so we worked with the PCT, who were encouraging us to kind of train up our staff to help communication. And on that basis, we've employed a lot of members of the local community. So we've currently got 26 healthcare assistants, all from the local community, that we've trained up to assist us in consultations. If I explain to you the patient journey, I guess. So Monday to Friday, we offer open access. So between 8:30 and 10:30, any of our 23,000 patients can simply walk into the surgery and we will see them. Partly that's because actually, a patient who was Lithuanian or Polish would really struggle to utilise a conventional appointment-based system. So to ring up the reception, book an appointment and get an appointment, would be really challenging. And also, I guess, as an organisation, we would need 7 or 8 different languages on our telephones to be able to meet the needs of the population. So instead of doing that, we offer this open access model where patients can just walk in. Often we'll have a Polish member of staff, a Lithuanian, someone who can speak Latvian, on our reception. They will ask the patient which language they speak. And when the patient confirms the language, they then are allocated to a doctor. So for example, this morning I was working with a Polish healthcare assistant and a Lithuanian healthcare assistant. And so the patients that want to speak Polish would get allocated to my Polish healthcare assistant on my list. And then the Polish healthcare assistant would call the patient into the room. So in this organization, rather than doctors having rooms, healthcare assistants have rooms and doctors have offices. So when the Polish healthcare assistant calls the patient into the room, their job is to kind of find out the agenda really from the patient. So for example, today I saw a patient with a cough. The healthcare assistant would then ask questions about the cough, when it started, whether they've got any temperature, whether they've had experience with it before. They'd even ask the kind of red flag questions. So is there any weight loss? Is there any blood coming up from anywhere? And then after doing that, based on what they've come in with, they would do some observations. So for example, they would take the pulse, they would record the oxygen saturations, do the blood pressure. And at that point, they would come and relay that information to me as the doctor. With that information, I might ask them to do some more investigations, but normally at that point, I would go into the clinical room. And when I go into the clinical room, my job is to kind of recap and make sure that I've got the agenda right, or we've got the agenda right. So to check that our understanding of why they're here is correct, summarize the information that I've received, and also ask additional questions that I might have as a doctor. At that point, then I would normally then examine the patient. And whilst I'm examining, I would kind of sound out my findings. So for example, I would say the respiratory rate is normal, the pulse is normal, the chest is clear. And I would relay, you know, whilst doing that, the healthcare assistant is both acting as my chaperone, but also recording information on system one, on our computer system. At that point, I would normally take over the consultation, check the information recorded on the system is accurate, and then take over the kind of second half of the consultation, the clinical management section, where I'm really kind of recapping the information that I've got, coming up with a plan with the patient. And then, for example, if that plan involved, you know, a spirometry test or further investigations, then after agreeing that plan with the patient, I would leave the healthcare assistant to enact that plan. Once I've done that process, then I go to my second room, where the Lithuanian healthcare assistant has started the same process with another patient, and complete the consultation in that same way. And that's how our morning is spent. In between, there's often time actually to go back to our office, you know, and go back to our desks. And in that time, we're often looking at kind of what home visit requests we might have, what results we might have, what letters we might need to file. So actually, you know, a real advantage in our system is hopefully we're meeting the needs of our patients, but also as a doctor, we kind of meet some of our agenda, which is to, I guess, exit the morning having completed some of the other tasks that otherwise would be left till the end of surgery.
So that's a really exciting model that you've put in place here, Neil, isn't it? And so thanks for taking us through the patient journey, which really brings to life the work you've done here locally. So I have a few follow-on questions from that, if that's right. So but what sort of feedback do you get from both patients and staff alike about this model?
I mean, we're very proud that actually through this, I mean, if you think about it, we've taken people that are often new to England, often new to the NHS, we've trained them up. You know, after about 18 months of our training, they become really, really useful members of staff, from not knowing anything about the NHS to being able to really help, you know, assist a consultation. And, you know, and we're lucky that many of our staff stay with us, but we're also very proud that many of our staff have gone on to be nurses, you know, healthcare assistants in the hospital, one's gone on to be a doctor. So actually we're quite proud of these, I guess, health stimulation that this journey has had for our staff members. So I guess the other question you asked about was patients. And you know, one of the you know, really interesting things is that often patients on my list are not asking for me as the doctor, they're actually asking for the healthcare assistant, because actually, you know, some of their bond has been with members of their own community that have often been helping them with their long-term conditions, or, you know, have seen them over a long period of time. So as well as kind of choosing doctors, people often choose the healthcare assistant that they want to be seen by. Our patient participation group is mainly British and Asian people over 60. And I guess for this model, that if we think about it, that's the population that we would think might have the most problem with our model, because it's so different from traditional general practice. But we get really good feedback from them when they've surveyed, you know, our patients and their own feelings, is that actually with the healthcare assistant model, they can spend longer, they can, you know, get all of their information out to them, they don't feel so rushed, because a lot of the patients feel that that doctor time is very precious, whereas with the healthcare assistants, they feel more able to share with them for, you know, over a longer period of time. So we get good feedback about that clinical model.
I'm going to be cheeky now, Neil, and just ask you a little question about that last response. And so where you said that, and I think this is true probably for people and patients in the UK and maybe in Europe, they seem to value doctor's time perhaps more than non-doctor's time. So do you find by setting up this model you've created a dependency, or are they coming back more often, or actually has it been useful in terms of fixing the problem, you know, when they actually attend?
I think our whole model is designed around providing access. So actually, when we look at, you know, if you look at the average attendance rate for someone who's young and meant to have non-complex health needs, you know, we might expect them to attend two or three times a year. Whereas when we survey for our patients, it is four or five times a year. Now, I think, you know, my point earlier about the complexity of the population, though, is that actually a 26-year-old who's new to a country, who doesn't have the support network, who might have also got medical problems from her own country without the benefit of public health, smoking, green spaces, etc. You know, I think the population is different, actually, and I don't think the increased attendance rate is an artifact of our clinical model. I think it is a representation, actually, that the population needs more than maybe the our own homegrown population, who've had some of the benefits that some of the migrant populations haven't had. I think the other thing to say is that, you know, I completely agree with you about our role in health promotion, and I think that's another really interesting thing about the model that we've set up, is that, you know, our healthcare assistants go beyond the kind of problem of, for example, the cough. You know, what they're trained to do is to almost be a bit of a care coordinator. So whilst they're waiting for the doctor to come in, they're doing things like checking the telephone numbers of the patients, checking when their smear is due, checking what immunizations might be due for the patient. They're also, you know, talking to them about kind of smoking, alcohol, exercise and things like that, because we believe that every contact should count. And the reality of the situation is that if I've got a traditional clinic of 15 or 18 patients, my radar may well be focused on looking for the cancers, looking for a heart attack that I need to admit, etc. Whereas actually our ability to do that health promotion robustly, routinely, you know, as a doctor, I think is quite limited when the NHS, as you've described it, is so stretched. And actually having someone whose role it is specifically to do that, and obviously the advice then being backed up by a doctor, I think is a really powerful model for change.
That's great to hear. So Neil, you guys are quite unique here, aren't you, in terms of your percentage of different ethnicities and nationalities within the practice. So there might be lists, and I think that's probably not the same for the vast majority of practices within England. But many of the listeners out there will be hearing this thinking, you know, that idea of having healthcare assistants taking histories and then, you know, reducing doctor time means you can almost see two patients at once, can't you? And, as you say, do a better job of getting through all the nuances of the subtle concerns and agendas that patients might have. So what's interesting is, what would be interesting to hear your thoughts on, is the training that you need to do for these your healthcare assistants, because obviously that's quite an important role where you're giving them a lot of responsibility, which they traditionally in the rest of England, they won't necessarily have that level of responsibility, will they?
Absolutely. I mean, I think governance has been a real important issue, you know, to make sure that we protect, I guess, the patients that we serve, the people in these roles, and the organisation. And so, you know, a lot of it, you know, how this all started was because when we had kind of a workforce issue here at Thistlemoore, my parents, who are two of the partners, my mother's father, so my grandfather, was ill in America. And when they went for hospital appointments with him in America, they realised that basically the person making the plan was the consultant physician, but the person enacting the plan was a healthcare assistant or medical assistant. And so the model that I've described that, so in operation now, I guess the idea behind it came from seeing what was happening elsewhere. And from seeing what happened elsewhere, we thought, well, what happens in those countries to train people up in that way? So we went to Harvard University and saw all the techs that they have to train people to do that role. And obviously that's based on an American system, and American healthcare and British healthcare is obviously different, so there's differences in that. And a lot of the techs were based on secondary care, so they weren't based on a primary, you know, and primary care in countries are different as well. So I guess we spent about a year personalizing those texts and that training and thinking about, well, what would it need to be fit for purpose for primary care, and what would it need to be fit for purpose for a British system. So we spent about a year developing that kind of training program that kind of looks at, you know, things like principles like confidentiality, boundaries, and kind of those kind of clinical governance things. And also, I guess, the teaching and theory behind, well, actually, how do you ask a history, you know, what, how do you set an agenda with a patient? So we formulated training. And I guess we've been doing this for a long time. So the model that we've got, you know, has been in development since the late 90s into the 2000s. And as well as the training, obviously the people in these positions need supervision. So, you know, there's both very experienced healthcare assistants that have been doing this for sort of 10 years and more that help provide some of the training and supervision. The nurses also help supervise and train. And we as GPs take a keen interest in training and developing our staff in that way.
You're listening to Primary Care Talks with Dr. Hassan Chahan. So Neil, have you found any additional benefits from having this service in place that actually you really weren't expecting at all when you first set out on this journey?
I mean, hopefully the explanation about the consultations makes it evident that I just don't think we could consult with our population and give them good access and care if we didn't have the model. But I think beyond that, I mean, if you think about it, if I'm trying to, you know, follow up a patient, it is really difficult, because where you as a GP might just pick up the phone and ask a patient how they're getting on, because of the language challenges, we need to have help in that communication. So often it is about trying to kind of get the healthcare assistants to be that conduit of information beyond the consultation as well. Really, that care coordination role that happens in the GP surgery, beyond that, a lot of their work is actually helping us provide good care, because we know that the population that we look after, for example, if we had a traditional kind of cervical screening kind of approach where, you know, they maybe got a text, the population that I look after would not come in with just that reminder. They need to be phoned, they need to have several texts and things like that. And I guess, you know, a GP or a doctor, it's a bad use of their time. For nursing staff, it's a bad use of their time. So actually having people that can almost kind of prompt and chase up after the population is a really useful useful facet from what they do. This year we've for our senior healthcare assistants, we've been doing a project on clinical letters. So we had lots of feedback from our doctors to say that they were struggling with the time they spent on clinical letters. And there's been lots of innovations around the country about thinking about admin staff and how they can be involved in clinical letters. And so we developed our own protocol here at Thistlemore, where we were trying to think about, well, how do we do this in a way that's safe for patients? How do we record letters in a better way? And so we kind of got the doctor that was best at reading letters, best at coding letters, and had the best approach to it, and we got them to write a protocol about what they would do. And through that process, we've, you know, the doctor's feedback is actually this has been a tremendous innovation, because actually, you know, after the morning surgery, spending about half an hour or 40 minutes on letters has kind of gone down to 5 minutes, because generally the plans that the healthcare assistants are coming up with are the plans that we would come up with from writing the letters.
Thank you. So, did you come across any barriers at the start? Have you come across any barriers as you've moved forward in terms of actually implementation? You know, whether that's from the patients that really are English speaking, perhaps, or your local population, or from, you know, local MPs, etc. Have you had any backlash as well?
I guess there was some nervousness around the healthcare community, because I guess starting this model, you know, it is so different to traditional general practice. So we had a very forward thinking chief executive when we started this model, whose name was Chris Town, and he asked Sheffield University to come and spend time with us to kind of assess the model and see what they thought. And so they spent about 5 days in the practice kind of interviewing patients, interviewing staff, and seeing, you know, what their conclusions were. And we were very proud at that time to get the kind of label of a learning organisation. So they said that, you know, the system that we'd set up was based around learning and development, which was exactly the ethos that we had. And so I think things like that help kind of justify and ratify the model that we've got. And we're also very proud that, you know, when we've had CQC come to the practice 3 times since its inception, and we're very proud to be the only practice in the Greater Peterborough area with an outstanding rating. So obviously, you know, that means a lot to us, because we do understand that our model is very different to traditional general practice. We're very proud about the benefits that we perceive and that patients tell us from our model, but we also want to make sure that our regulators are happy that the clinical model that we've set up is kind of safe, effective and caring.
So now you guys have come a long way from then to here, haven't you? So I guess, you know, you sound like somebody who's not really going to stop innovating. So what's next for you guys? Have you got stuff in the pipeline you can tell us about?
So we're very excited to have additional members of staff like paramedics and pharmacists. And so we've had our pharmacists for the last year. And I guess the other thing that we're looking to do is to think about how the model that we've set up, you know, how could that be rolled out across the NHS? Because I guess, as you said, the language is very specific to Thistlemoor and maybe a few practices around Peterborough. But that essence of someone setting the agenda, someone helping with that kind of administrative work, and someone helping communicate with patients rather than occupying a doctor's or nurse's time, that sounds to us like a reproducible role. So I'm going up to a national meeting about assistance in consultation rooms, where I'm presenting kind of the model that we've got here, just as I presented to you. And really, I guess our offer to Health Education England and the NHS is to think about, well, how can we make this reproducible? And we've had exciting conversations with the CCG, who are saying that a part of their transformation agenda is to kind of look at this, and they've asked to scope perhaps putting together a program that would kind of take people that are maybe traditionally healthcare assistants or have a bit of a medical background and move them into this kind of medical assistant model. So, you know, we're really excited to be part of that development.
Neil, I think you may have inadvertently stumbled upon a role for physician assistants within primary care, because I know they're trying to explore where they actually fit in, and I think actually this would be a completely reasonable slot for them to slot into directly.
So I think here, with our healthcare assistants, we've got some golden rules. And the golden rule is that their role is information gathering. Their role is not to provide suggestions on medical management, and that is a very strong line in the sand. If we find people crossing that line, then obviously we need to have conversations, because actually they're not nurses, they're not doctors. And so to actually kind of say to a patient, this is the suggested plan, is not their role, and we're very clear about that from the start. And so, you know, for that role of physician's assistants, blurs that boundary, because often it goes beyond information gathering into formulating an idea of what's going on with a patient and suggesting a management plan. I don't think that is a bad thing to happen, but I think the governance around that needs to be very strong, because actually, again, to protect the patient, to protect the member of staff, and to protect the organisation, the follow-up, the support, and making sure that the diagnosis being made are accurate, you know, is really important.
So Neil, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us today. I have one final request, and that's that our listeners may want to contact you for some further information about the model or how they can maybe implement it, specifically, you know, around some of maybe even the governance processes which you may be willing to share. Is it possible for us to put your contact details out with the podcast so that they can get in touch?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. I'm happy to do that. We have historically arranged practice visits, so if they did want to come and see, then, you know, via myself, my practice manager, we'd be happy to arrange things like that as well.
Senil, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. It's been amazing to hear about the service that you've got in place here at Thistlemoor. I'm, you know, from the sounds of things, it's helping your doctors, it's helping your staff, and more importantly, it's helping your population. So this really is a forward-thinking, innovative practice, and hopefully we can reproduce some of this throughout England and the United Kingdom to try and learn from some of your actions. So I found that fascinating to speak to Neil. These are some great ideas that his practice have come up with to try to help with their challenges, And I really think these are reproducible up and down the country. And I'm sure many of you are listening to this thinking, I could implement that locally. And I think you could. Next time, we're going to be talking to Dr. Miles Langdon. He's running the largest super partnership in the NHS. He's going to tell us about how he's made the primary care home model work.
A quick reminder, if you are planning local changes or initiatives, always involve NHS England to make sure your plans fit within the national guidelines.